Hello, everyone. Welcome to Tech Can Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I am your host, Paul David, founder and CEO of Literal Humans. And I'm joined today by Dr. Joel Bronstein, CEO and president and also co-founder of C2N Diagnostics. We're going to talk about transforming Alzheimer's disease diagnosis through blood tests. Welcome to the pod, Joel.
Great. Thanks for having me, Paul. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Where are you calling in from today, Joel?
Calling in from Chicago.
Nice.
Heat advisory here. Summers are a little bit tough, but it's a great city. It's originally where I'm from.
Nice, nice. Well, hang in there. I'm a Philly guy, so I know about the summer heat and how it hits those big cities. So hang in there. Well, today, you know, we're very excited to welcome Dr. Bronstein, who's, as I mentioned, CEO and president at C2N Diagnostics. C2N develops and commercializes novel diagnostics for Alzheimer's disease and related forms of neurodegeneration to improve treatment decisions in patients' lives. Just for our audience, I think I've mentioned this on previous podcasts. This is an issue that hits near and dear to my heart. I've got a dad who's getting older and suffers from dementia. So I've been personally affected by this, and I've seen, you know, what that neurodegeneration looks like in my own immediate family. So we're big fans of the work that Dr. Bronstein and his team are doing over at C2N. And yeah, we're here to talk about it today. So first of all, Dr. Bronstein, thank you for what you're doing. You're affecting millions of folks' lives, and we're super grateful for that.
Great. Thank you for the kind words. And I can certainly relate. I think all of us are personally affected one way or another by Alzheimer's disease. It's just highly prevalent. Yeah. And as a natural course of aging, you know, there's inevitably concerns about one's cognitive aging and whether it's following a normal trajectory or whether there could be reasons for concern.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it is a deeply personal experience for all of us. One of the common threads from virtually everyone in this company is they can really get behind the vision and mission of the company because we do feel like we're having a potential, you know, substantial impact for many patients.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, just to dig in here and share a bit more about your background, Dr. Bronstein, you're a physician and biotech executive with over 20 years of experience as a senior executive in numerous emerging life sciences company. In particular, when we refer to C2N, you know, your Precivity, am I saying that right? Precivity?
Precivity.
Correct. Yeah, Precivity line of blood tests help healthcare providers diagnose Alzheimer's disease a bit better. Journal of American Medical Association last year published a landmark clinical study showing that C2N's Precivity AD2 blood test markedly improves the accuracy of Alzheimer's diagnosis in primary care and specialized memory care. So the research found that Precivity's AD2 test delivers confirmatory diagnostic performance. We're going to get into what all that means. And it's comparable to CSF biomarkers and amyloid PET to identify the presence or absence of brain amyloid pathology. You're going to explain all that to us, doctor. So don't worry.
We're going to get into that. It sounds like a different language, and it's there's quite a bit of medical vernacular in there. But I think that the bottom line is when we think about, you know, from a patient's perspective or just any of us, when we present to our clinician, we usually present with some kind of clinical concern. I mean, something is prompting us to go visit our clinician to say that there could be, I mean, of course, there's health and wellness screenings and prevention medicine, of course, which is worth, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. But when we typically get into the medical system, it is usually prompted by some kind of symptom. And of course, with normal aging, cognitive concerns can be quite common. And so the biggest dilemma is of course, when you present, are those changes consistent with a normal aging process? Or could it be something more sinister and potentially some kind of pathological condition or some kind of disease that is causing an abnormal cognitive state of mind? Alzheimer's disease, you know, people usually use the term Alzheimer's disease and dementia interchangeably, but the reality is that dementia is really a manifestation of Alzheimer's disease. So there are many forms of dementia. It just so happens that Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia with progressive aging. But there are other causes that can be quite common. Diagnostic dilemma when a patient presents to the medical clinic with a primary complaint of, you know, cognitive concerns. You have to figure out, well, is this due to some underlying disease process? Is this due to just simply just natural course of aging? And then when we say, well, yes, in fact, there is some kind of clinical condition that appears to be present accounting for this accelerated cognitive decline, the next question is, what's causing it? And so Alzheimer's disease represents one of those causes, but there are many other forms of dementia that as clinicians, we need to also be thinking about because some of those are readily reversible. For instance, there are certain medications that can impact cognition. There are multiple other medical states that can have an impact. And the ability to go to a clinician who understands some of the tools that we have available to evaluate that individual thoroughly, which combines clinical examination, history, medical history, understanding if there might be Alzheimer's disease in the family. And then, of course, there are specialized tests. And so this is some of what you were referring to. When we think about the tools that are available to the clinical community to help get to a precise diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, and we'll talk a little bit about why it's important to know whether or not it's Alzheimer's disease or some other cause of dementia, you now have access to imaging. There's MRI, and then there's PET scans. And then, of course, there are some more invasive modalities like cerebral spinal fluid or lumbar punctures. But fortunately, you know, this has been the way in which we've thought about Alzheimer's disease for decades. And now we have blood tests that are extremely accurate that effectively provide the same kind of information as you can get with more invasive or more expensive modalities. And so that represents the real innovation here.
That's amazing. We'll just want to take a step back and sort of frame things a bit for our audience. And I know your company has attracted some really impressive partnerships or, you know, recent $10 million investment from the, you know, Samsung. And, you know, you've partnered with folks like the Michael J. Fox Foundation for Parkinson's Research. And, you know, you've got an agreement, non-exclusive agreement with Mayo Clinic, which folks may have heard of. So, you know, lots of strong momentum and sort of wind behind your back. So very excited to kind of see that. But even taking a step further back, and I think many of our listeners probably aren't that familiar with biomarker diagnostics. You explained some of it a bit. But just if you could pull back a bit and like walk our audience through the landscape of Alzheimer diagnosis and how it's evolved. It sounds like, you know, fairly significantly over the past decade, you know, traditional diagnostic methods, blood-based methods, which you kind of got into there, where C2N fits in that transformation and kind of the impact on patients. We'd love to hear your big picture of the landscape there.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the US alone, there's about 6 million individuals with Alzheimer's disease and probably another 13-14 million people who have fallen into this category of mild cognitive impairment. And so these are very large numbers. And then amplify that on a global stage, you're talking about hundreds of millions of individuals who may be manifesting some of the earliest stages of cognitive decline. And so, as we indicated before, like Alzheimer's disease is one form of cognitive decline. And when the patient presents to the clinic, like, they're not telling the doctor what it is, right? And so one of the things that's really been illuminating in our research and the research of others as they've really tried to understand this is that clinical diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease is using typical standard tools is really unfortunately quite poor. So you can see in the earliest stages of a person's presentation, misdiagnosis rates as high as 30 to 50%. That's literally almost like 1 in 3 to 1 in 2 individuals who are presenting with the earliest symptoms and signs, and then they wind up getting either diagnosed with Alzheimer's when in fact it isn't, or there's this indication that, well, it's not Alzheimer's, don't worry about it, when in fact maybe it is the early stages. And so I ask the question, in what area of clinical medicine are we satisfied with a 30 to 50% clinical misdiagnosis rate? And of course, I don't think any of us would say that that's an acceptable kind of standard given where our health system is today and the tools that can be available to us. And so that's where having biological markers of disease becomes really important. I think the gold standard for this is in cancer. Like when an individual has early symptoms or something concerning for possible cancer, they immediately get into a health system where they're doing detailed characterization of what the underlying biology of the cancer is. And having that specificity of a diagnosis for what kind of cancer really has a big impact on how you treat, you know, the following treatment course. And so getting to that staging of the disease, as well as the specific characterization, is really only made possible through the advent of tools that can begin to look into the underlying biology. And that's where these amyloid PET scans or tau PET scans come in, because they are imaging modalities that can actually look at visual displays of these pathologies that cause underlying Alzheimer's disease. And you can actually pick it, you can actually visualize it on a scan. But those are expensive and they involve exposure to radioactive tracers. And so we immediately think about, like, are there some more convenient methods to be able to get at the biology? And so then, of course, there are these other modalities like lumbar puncture, which involves a spinal tap and then accessing the cerebrospinal fluid, or blood. And we can now run these measurements, take those samples in a clinical lab and run them to look for underlying biomarkers of disease. These biomarkers will actually inform with a very high degree of specificity that, in fact, it's Alzheimer's disease. So what we found in the JAMA paper that you briefly referenced earlier in the conversation, what we found was that in the natural course of care in both primary care and secondary care, getting to that high misdiagnosis rate, these are people who presented with early signs or symptoms of cognitive impairment, and clinical misdiagnosis rates ranged between 27 and 37% in that specific study. Then when you added the biomarkers with our specific test, you could actually bring that diagnostic accuracy to over 90%. And that winds up being a major innovation, because now what you've done is you've been able to say to the patient, we have a very high degree of confidence whether Alzheimer's disease is present or not. And now that we understand what could be the underlying contribution to the symptoms that you're experiencing, let's now think about the appropriate therapies or appropriate strategies to modify your future progression of disease. And that's leading to better clinical outcomes. C2N diagnostics has kind of been at the forefront of precision medicine in Alzheimer's disease for almost close to 20 years. So we started with some foundational, really impactful technology out of the Washington University School of Medicine. Mm-hmm. And they had a breakthrough technology to understand some of the biology of Alzheimer's disease. And we took those early inventions and we turned them into blood tests. And the first blood test, we were the first company in the world to offer a commercial clinical blood test. That was 2020. And so we've actually been around for 5 years with commercial clinical blood tests, but only in the last few years has that really taken off, because the field is now ready to say, like, we can do better and we absolutely should be offering these patients this elevated quality of care that we can now achieve with biomarkers.
Would love to dig into your product, like specifically your flagship product, because you mentioned, you know, like the amount of time you've been on the scene and sort of the different products you've rolled out. But specific to Precivity 82, you know, can you just explain to our listeners, like, you know, what makes this test so groundbreaking, and why is your focus on this specific test in this current moment?
Yeah, so I think that there's a number of maybe explanations around the novelty. The first one is we use a very sophisticated analytical platform, and that's the tools that we use to actually make the biological measurements in blood. And so we use a system that's known as a mass spectrometry. So, you know, that's not a common term that people use around the house, right? But in the research labs and across academic centers all over the world, people have been using mass spectrometry for decades because it's an incredibly powerful tool to get deep into understanding the biology of complex diseases. Alzheimer's disease is a highly complex disease. And so mass spectrometry as a research tool is kind of a really powerful analytical instrument. So we were able to take the mass spectrometer-based approach and actually apply it to developing a very easy, highly accurate blood test. So that was one of the first innovations, is using a mass spectrometer to make these highly sensitive and delicate measurements in fluids like blood or even CSF. The second innovation is that as a company, C2N Diagnostics really focuses on the clinical problem. And so, like, I'm a cardiologist. I trained in health services research. I trained in trying to understand how we measure clinical evidence and then take really good clinical evidence and translate that into improvements for patient care. And so the field of Alzheimer's disease and neurology is complex biology. Having clinicians who really understand the underpinnings of the disease, understand how to take what they know from a clinical perspective and apply it to discoveries in the lab, that was really some of the work, groundbreaking work that occurred at Washington University. And two of the scientific co-founders of C2N Diagnostics are professors David Holtzman and Randall Bateman. And they're professors at Washington University School of Medicine. And they've been really international leaders in understanding Alzheimer's disease, the markers that predispose to it, and how to think about the biology translating it into clinical solutions. So the second innovation was the fact that we really look at our innovations with a clinical lens in the patient in mind. Okay, so we had the analytical tools, we understood the disease, and then third, I mean, you talk about tenacity, patience, and persistence from our team. And this team has works tirelessly, and the only way in which C2N Diagnostics as a company can exist in a very competitive ecosystem with many large companies trying to develop competing technologies is by focusing on quality and that white glove service and a commitment to evidence. And so we have been really kind of leaders in the field with regard to the quality of the publications and the scientific evidence to show that you can trust our biomarker measurements to help provide that information that as a clinician, they're looking for to help make that better diagnosis. And we've proven that out in many, many different types of studies. And that becomes really important for adoption of new technologies in healthcare. So you could have the best, like we could talk about the most amazing experiment done in an academic lab, and then, you know, maybe it's replicated in another lab and it can be really elegant with regard to the story it tells. But unless you figure out a way to take that technology, scale it, reproduce it, and then demonstrate the evidence for why it's so impactful in clinical care, it's very hard to get the clinical community to adopt these new technologies. Like clinicians are really taught and educated to focus on strength of the evidence. So C2N is a company that has, you know, almost like an unparalleled commitment to evidence generation. A lot of companies do that, but this is something that we think is a core attribute of our company and has been a big driver of why people recognize C2N Diagnostics as a leader in the space of precision medicine for Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, I especially love that you highlighted the distinction between product and sort of service, you know, like attention to that. That's something we've seen a lot in our space is a lot of growth partners and agencies, they have like a great widget, a great tool, you know, a great singular service, but they don't think about like client management, account management, and sort of the softer stuff. And I think that's really important
to customer care experience, right?
Yeah, customer care and that kind of bedside matter piece. So I'm really glad you highlighted that. Wanted to dig a bit more into, you know, sort of your growth strategy. I mean, we're a growth strategy agency. We help, you know, tech startups scale. We help, you know, charities like grow their donor base and their, you know, fundraising strategy, connecting it to their marketing. You've recently, you know, received $10 million from Samsung, and you've got great partnerships like the ones we mentioned with Michael J. Fox Foundation and great partnerships with Mayo Clinic, Unilabs, all that stuff. Want to understand how your growth strategy is evolving, because this is kind of the nerdy growth stuff that we love to dig into, moving from being research focused to sort of commercial availability, leveraging some of these high profile partnerships and kind of getting into potential international expansion. Walk us through that. Where are you at right now? How has it evolved over time?
The growth is a frenetic pace of growth there for a number of reasons. First of all, the industry and the field that we're in is moving at a blistering pace right now. And I came from the field of cardiovascular medicine. And I say that the heyday for cardiovascular innovation was in the 90s, early 2000s. I mean, there's still incredible innovation occurring in cardiovascular disease. But in cancer, you saw this enormous amount of innovation really starting around the 2010 timeframe. So Alzheimer's disease and neurodegeneration has been a really difficult field to tackle with effective therapies and simple tools that can inform about, let's say, diagnosis, right? Specific diagnoses with the advent of, let's say, blood tests. And so the field is moving extraordinarily fast right now. You might ask, why is it moving so fast? And I think it's because we're kind of at a point in the history of Alzheimer's disease and neurology care where we've never been before. Based on essential understandings of some of the underlying biology, we're now seeing to see those learnings translate into effective therapies and concrete solutions for, let's say, better diagnosis. So with early success begets more success, right? So in the last few years, you've seen several disease-modifying therapies approved by the FDA and other international regulatory agencies for treating patients with Alzheimer's disease using drugs that actually counter the underlying biology of the disease. This is a little bit different from the way in which Alzheimer's disease has historically been treated, which was largely with therapies that modified the symptoms or helped manage the symptoms of people with later stage Alzheimer's disease, oftentimes early dementia or moderate dementia, or sometimes even severe dementia. And now what we're finding is that based on the biology, those biological changes of Alzheimer's disease can start to occur 20 years before symptom onset. Scary to think that, I mean, to be honest, the brain is not so different from the heart and other organs throughout the body, right? And we know that cardiovascular disease as an analogy, right? That one doesn't manifest a heart attack on day one from the time that they initially developed, let's say, coronary heart disease or atherosclerosis. We know that that's a lengthy process that builds up over many years. And so the same thing can be said for Alzheimer's disease, that we know these biological markers, these bad actors, are starting to become abnormal years and years and years before someone actually displays symptoms. Well, guess what? Just like the way we think about treating cancer as early as possible, because we know early detection leads to better clinical outcomes, it's like treating a person with, let's say, stage one cancer versus much more advanced cancer. We're seeing the exact same thing in Alzheimer's disease, that the earlier you go, the earlier one can confirm that these bad actors are playing a role in some underlying disease for an individual, that we can now introduce these therapies to slow down the progression. And we are literally, within the next couple of years, going to see the readout of some very large clinical studies that will have actually tested the hypothesis that not only can we identify clinical disease at the earliest stages of symptoms, what if we actually go to individuals who are high risk and don't have any symptoms whatsoever? Can we actually prevent them from developing clinical symptoms to begin with? That's ultimately what we're trying to prevent in Alzheimer's disease, because the real scourge of the disease is the fact that it leads to loss of independence, functional decline, and really impacts every aspect of one's life. But if you can stay cognitively intact, isn't that what we're ultimately after, right? And if we can treat those underlying biological markers of disease that are playing a role in the disease process, now we're onto something. The blood testing and the ability to early diagnose goes hand in glove with the ability to treat early. You can't treat without having a specific diagnosis. Yeah. And so that's one of the reasons why this field is moving so fast. And as a company, we have to be very reactive and think ahead, but we have to move quick, right? So there's a lot of internal pressures at C2N to continue to innovate and to be able to scale those offerings that we currently have that we know can offer patient benefits.
Yeah, two things. I mean, one, I'd never really thought as much about the importance of sort of like detection and diagnostics as relates to prevention. You know, like I think people just think of prevention as like, oh, we need to do some things, you know, to prevent. It's very active. It's very sort of like, you know, forward. But in order to even understand what and how to prevent, you need to detect. You need to, you know, look at these biomarkers. You need to run these diagnostics. And, you know, you're actually wasting your time and potentially endangering the patient, I would assume, if you're just trying to prevent without in an ill-informed or uninformed way. So this is like opened my eyes to that. It's really, really interesting to see you all doing that. And then what is the last thing you just mentioned that jumped out to me right there? Oh, just the piece in health tech. We work, you know, in health tech a good bit, and balancing that pressure, you know, the downward pressure from funders and investors, and, you know, you got to scale, you got to grow with, okay, we need to do this, you know, in a regulatory compliant way. We need to, you know, we have patients, you know, we're actually dealing with is life or death for a lot of people. So to me, it's one of the most fascinating sectors in tech because you have to really, really tightly, you know, walk that tightrope and balance those considerations.
You have to balance the unmet medical need and the demand from external stakeholders to make sure that you get the science right. Because when we go provide a test result to an individual, that means a tremendous amount to that person, right? You need to make sure that you have validated your markers, that you've done an adequate job of understanding how the test performs in more complex patients, because those are the patients who are presenting to primary care. And we saw this in the JAMA study, tended to have a lot more coexistent other medical conditions, and they tended to be a bit older. And so the primary care doctor is seeing a patient that has not just, let's say, a cognitive concern. They might have kidney disease, or they might have diabetes, or they might have high blood pressure, and all of those things need to be managed. And so the question is, like, how do these biomarkers perform in the more complex patient? Because these markers are biological analytes that are impacted by system health. I'm talking body system health, right? So if a person is not generally well for a variety of medical conditions, that can impact the way in which we interpret the results of these tests. And so there's been an extensive amount of work that we've been doing to understand that. We use the term robustness a lot at C2N, because robustness means that you can develop your test. And even if you test it in a smaller number of people, how well is it going to stand up to the challenges of the real world patient? And every patient presents with their own story. Every patient has a certain complexity to their medical presentation. And the onus is on C2N on how our biomarkers that we're providing to individuals will behave in those conditions, right? And so I think that we do balance, we take that responsibility really seriously. And then I think, you know, this idea of like, how do we address the, you know, the pressures to grow? I think that it starts with the team. It comes back to an incredibly passionate team who works tirelessly on, you know, the various responsibilities that we have as a company.
Yeah, it's always about the team. Would love to dig into a bit more about your background and kind of what you're bringing to this, and just hear a bit more about your journey as a co-founder, because that's always, you know, some of the most interesting bits there. You went from being a cardiologist at Johns Hopkins, no small feat, to co-founding a diagnostics company that's focused on brain health. So I'd just love to hear a bit more about your personal journey and kind of what drove you to make that transition. If there were any, you know, moments or experiences that you know, got you invested in better Alzheimer's diagnostics, and yeah, just how your background has shaped your approach to building C2N.
Yeah, that's great. So there is a quote that I really like from Albert Einstein. And he says, I have no special talents. I am only passionately curious. And so for me, I think that's been an underlying thread to my career development, which has been this incredible curiosity to continue to learn. And I think that that's a common thread for a lot of clinician scientists who, you know, are interested in asking important research questions, and then they spend years and years to try to address those questions in a thorough manner. And C2N has been an 18-year journey. But I always say that for me, it in many ways never felt like a day of work. Always surrounding myself with incredibly bright people. We work with the smartest neurologists and scientists around the world who are trying to, you know, crack this problem. And they view us as a partner because we're able to contribute something to that charge.
Absolutely.
So it's the curiosity for me, which really drove my career pathway. I think that, you know, I felt that it, as a clinician, we struggle a lot when you go through traditional training. It's like you're kind of, the model is centered around a one-on-one interaction, and that's the clinician with the patient. And so you're having an incredible impact on that patient at the time that you're interacting with that person, and then the relationship over time. But then I said, like, how do you amplify that? And so thinking about macro problems became an area of keen interest to me in the earlier part of my career, where I said, what can we do to elevate population health? What can we do to address some of the greatest unmet medical needs in medicine? And of course, you know, I mean, one of my challenges that, you know, I love to, I love to meander and I love to think about creative ideas. And then as a company, that can sometimes even lead to some friction because you have to prioritize, right? But idea generation to me is the lifeblood of innovation to a company. And so it's constantly saying, oh, well, what about this, and learning. And so when I was introduced through a mutual colleague, a mentor of mine, Harlan Krumholtz from Yale University School of Medicine, he was close colleagues with David Holtzman, who's one of the scientific co-founders of this company. And Harlan introduced me to Dave Holtzman in the early days. And I was also working with another colleague, Ilana Fogelman, who came from the FDA. She's also a clinician scientist. And so we met Dave Holtzman and Randy Bateman, who was actually a young postdoc in Dave Holtzman's lab. So he too was early in his career. And I just got together with them and I said, these are just brilliant guys. And they're addressing this major unmet medical need in medicine. And maybe there's just one opportunity for me to have an impact by working with them. And that was really the genesis of C2N. I said, important clinical problem, wonderful science, and great people that we've surrounded ourselves with to try to build this. And 18 years later, I mean, we're still learning and still growing, and we've been able to contribute in many different ways over the course of our 18-year history.
That's a great story. You love to see those. I just was in a meeting with a client today and just talking about, you know, like loyalty and longevity and like sort of, you know, long-term partnership and just the value of that.
And I think it gets like it's tenacity. It is like, yeah, you're focused on a goal. Like you have to be relentless in the pursuit. And,
yeah,
you know, you have to make compromises along the way, right? You personal compromises, yeah, time commitments, time conflicts. Well, you can feel really good about the end game and what you've been able to provide to the field and to patients.
Absolutely. And I think that like that tenacity and that stick-to-itness, it really, like you see when you start a business and you focus on a goal and just like you see it really is what separates people, you know, like, and like it's no judgment, it's no sort of, shade, as they say, but it's just sort of like, you know, how do you stick to those goals? How do you stay focused? You know, that focus tenacity, I think you can be tenacious and be all over the place, you know what I mean? But if you can focus it and have a disciplined tenacity, I think is kind of the key. And that's something I've learned as a first time founder and CEO is like, man, there were just some years where I was just all over the place, tenacious, but just like all over the map. So I appreciate your personal reflections.
That's also part of the growth too, right?
Because you
learn, right? I mean, look,
I
haven't always made the right decision, and none of us make perfect decisions, right? And so you learn from those experiences and then you internalize it. And then it makes you stronger as you're moving forward, right? And then it gives you confidence that as you start to make progress with a certain pathway, that failure actually breeds some of the confidence to keep going.
Definitely.
And being able to pivot. And then you know it, like that perception becomes a reality. Like that long-term vision starts to become a reality. We have a lot to do still at C2N, but we have made an impact, right? That I feel very confident about. And for me, that's professionally extremely rewarding, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's great. That's great to hear. Let's turn to our quick fire questions. This is just a chance for like short, snappy questions, short, snappy answers. You know, first thing that comes to mind, you've had a chance to think about them already, so they won't be any surprise, but we'd like to just give the audience a chance to learn a bit more about you and just introduce a little bit of fun to the podcast. So obviously, as we just said, you're busy, you know, with C2N, but I'm sure, as is the case with a lot of co-founders, founders, you've had other ideas pop up over the years. So this is kind of a question to get at that. If you could found another tech startup, what would it be and why?
That's a great question. This is not an easy one to answer because there's a lot of different ideas that I would love to just continue exploring. And I think an underlying theme of what we've talked about is curiosity. And so I mean, just personally, one of my favorite pastimes is landscape and wildlife photography. And for me, it's a connection to the physical world that allows you to see it in a unique kind of artistic way. And then what's amazing is you could look at a certain landscape and you can start to pick out patterns, and those patterns start to tell a story. And for me, I love the idea of creating a story. So now, what kind of tech invention? I mean, part of my response was going to be like, you know, I feel like I've worked so hard over the last 20 years that, you come to a point in your life where you're like, hey, it'd be nice to just set up a little Photoshop and display some of your landscape and wildlife photos and maybe sell a few of them. But to get a little bit more sophisticated in terms of a tech innovation, I do think the natural world is under a tremendous amount of stress, right? And I think that you can think about many areas where you can have an impact for societies and the world in general. And I think for me, it's sustainability is a critical issue. And I'm very connected to that when I'm taking photographs of unique wildlife. I had a recent chance to, you know, be in some of the national parks and saw some exquisite animals, and you just watch them in their peace, but then you also recognize all the stress that surrounds them. And so I think this idea of sustainability and clean energy is super interesting. Ways to sequester, you know, rising CO2 levels. So those are big challenges. And yeah. Yet we're starting to see some really interesting technical innovations there that, hey, it'd be amazing to like roll up my sleeves. I'm certainly not an expert in the area, but I know how to ask scientific questions. And you surround yourself with smart people and maybe you can make something of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think all the spaces you mentioned are interesting. We're starting to move into the climate tech space a bit more and work with, particularly like carbon sequestration is like a really, really interesting space. And so we've got a couple potential, you know, partnerships with folks in that space to just like kind of help them knock the ball out of the park. So it's really, really exciting.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm going to hold you to the short answer thing for the next four. You had a good answer for that first one, but I'm going to hold you to it for these next. So again, first thing that comes to mind, short, snappy answer. Next question, what tech invention makes you the most excited?
I would actually say carbon sequestration. I mean, it's okay. Funny you brought it up, but that's actually where I was kind of thinking. I think it's amazing.
It's a cool space. Promise. And then flip side of that one, what makes you the most concerned? What tech invention makes you the most concerned?
I think the pace of innovation of AI makes me a little bit concerned, and it's really relates to issues around deepfake, and that relates to information bias and being able to use what we have, all these inputs from around the world, and say, you know, is it accurate information, and how can we make evidence-based decisions?
Yeah, the typical answer we get. So yeah, definitely feel that. Who is a literal human who's been integral to your career journey that you want to shout out quickly?
I would say there's been many, but I'm going to actually say this one is my mother.
Oh.
The critical element of my mother is that she always said I could do anything I wanted. And so, you know, you always need a champion, and she's been unwavering. I've got wonderful parents, but my father and mother, but my mother, it didn't matter what I did. It was always the best.
Yeah, I had that and too.
It,
I feel that.
It gave me incredible confidence.
You see the difference that makes in people's lives when they've had that versus when they haven't. So yeah, really, really appreciate that one. And then staying on the theme of inspiration, what's an inspirational quote that stuck with you through your journey in tech? Maybe it can be from mom or anyone else who inspired you.
Yeah, this one's a little philosophical, but you know, Nelson Mandela has a really interesting quote, which is, there is no passion to be found playing small in settling for a life that is less than the one you are capable of living.
Amazing.
So it's really this idea of, you know, you don't fail unless you try. Yeah. And you can learn amazing things even if you fail. And it's all part of the journey.
I think I love the playing small piece of it too. I think some, you know, we forget sometimes how we allow other people's opinions or other, you know, societal dynamics to make us play small, either, you know, implicitly or explicitly. And,
I think it's easy to underestimate the individual impact a person can have. And
totally.
It only starts with individuals.
Totally. Listen, Dr. Bronstein, this has been a fascinating conversation. I'm so excited that you took the time to do it today. You know, what strikes me the most about the work that you're doing at C2N is you're not just developing the technology for technology's sake. You're creating tools that are just giving families, you know, clarity during some of their most difficult moments. And, you know, the ability to diagnose Alzheimer's with a simple blood test rather than these invasive procedures is uniquely and genuinely transformative for healthcare. And you have a lot to be proud of, and you're doing amazing work. And we just thank you for sharing that with us today. Where can folks learn more about the work that you're doing at C2N Diagnostics on the interwebs?
Yeah, it's great. They can go to www.c2n.com. You can also go to our blood test. Name is Precivity AD. That's a little bit of a mouthful, right? Precivity AD.
Nice.
.com. But C2N.com will get you to, you know, a portal that allows you to access even the products that we have. And we really try to take pride in, you know, getting our publications out there, press releases, and our company's also always accessible. So if You can always write info@c2n.com and you'll have someone respond to you.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much again, Dr. Brunstein. I know you're really busy kind of, saving the world, through the work that you're doing. And so it means a lot that you took the time to kind of come out here and explain it to our audience. And folks in the audience, please give us a review, give us a rating. That helps us bring on more incredible guests like Dr. Joel Brunstein from C2N Diagnostics. Folks who are using technology to make a real difference in people's lives. That's the heart and soul of Tech Can Save Us. Thank you, Dr. Brunstein, again. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be right back.